Okay, so our new sugya today from the Vav Mud Aleph is ostensibly about the topic of Cheskes Tashmishin. And they say ostensibly because you'll see there's actually a little bit of room to wonder exactly what this Gemara is doing here and why it is placed where it is. So that itself is fascinating. This Masechta, I can't say it enough, is a beautiful Masechta that has layer upon layer and level upon level, both, I guess, literally and conceptually. And this is a little bit what you'll see from this particular sugya, which will build upon, again, literally and figuratively, what we have seen so far in a couple of different ways and provide extra background for a number of different topics that we've seen, while also laying the foundation, literally and figuratively, for the sugyas that come after. And especially its relationship to the second parak is very noteworthy. Its relationship to Chezkas Abatim is very noteworthy. And in fact, part of the question, actually, the relationship to later Gemaras is so strong that it actually presents the question, why is it here and not in the second parak, where maybe it would be a little bit more fitting? And that's itself something we need to figure out. So let's try to get some introductory ideas here. So what does our Gemara tell us? So let's take a look a little bit at how it starts. All right, so our Gemara had been picking off of the Mishnah, which had told us the various rules relating to Reuven and Shimon, our good friends. Reuven has built a fence, has built a wall, rather in between him and Shimon, which goes beyond, exceeds the requirements for Hezek Re'iyah, and therefore the question becomes to Shimon's liability. And the Mishnah discusses that it all depends, that just the Hezek Re'iyah part that they have to share, but anything beyond that is going to hinge on how much Shimon is interested, and does he do anything to express his potential future benefit from what Reuven has done, and his intent to build on, literally, what Reuven has provided for him. So it's within that context that the Gemara gets into this, and it says over here in the middle of Avon Aleph, Samach lo kol salach megag v'mustakol, that's from the Mishnah, so Amar Rav Huna, Samach lo palga, Samach lo kula, Rav Nachman Amar, L'mayda Samach Samach, L'mayda loy Samach, loy Samach. So first off, we have a machlokas here between Rav Huna and Rav Nachman as to whether this only relates to what he actually paralleled with his new construction, with Shimon's new construction, or does it relate to the entire wall? And we noted yesterday, during the Tainus and our Shir on Asar B'Tevis, that there is some maybe more than superficial symmetry between this sugya and the Gemara we saw yesterday about Asar B'Tevis, that inheres in this word samach. That word is a little bit of an ambiguous word, and its ambiguity may actually be quite relevant. That we fasted yesterday because it was the day Shabo Samach Melech Nebuchadnezzar al Ha'ir, that the king came close to the city. In general, in Hebrew, samach is a hard word to translate because it has a lot of possible meanings, which may actually be different from each other in its literal application. So samach could literally mean to lean against something, and therefore more figuratively to rely on something. Or it could also mean close to, which is also synergistic if you're learning Daf Yomi, because if you're learning the first Daf in Megillah, so also there, it uses the word in the sense of close. Right, so we talked about the first Mishnah of Megillah is talking about the different dates for reading the Megillah. And there, the ones that survive today, we know we have Shushan Purim and regular Purim, so the 14th and the 15th. So the Gemara uses the expression of a krach v'kol ha-samachlo that included in that which is subject to one status or the other has to do with that which is near enough. So that doesn't mean leaning against, it means near. So the word has some ambiguity to it, and that's important to appreciate. but also as far as its connection to Sar Bateve. So we noted thematically yesterday that it was significant because it actually represented the whole nature of Asar Bateves, which was potential impact, but not yet actualized. So, and that maybe characterized the whole fast. Maybe the fast was different from something like Tisha B'Av, where something actually happened, in the sense that it represented a potential. Okay, he's nearby now, he is poised to go further. But had things stopped there and had he turned around, then there never would have been anything bad associated with the Asar Bateves. So it's actually hugely relevant to our sugya, which is all about what is the message of Samach, what happens when somebody is at that proximity. So how much do we read into his intent and to his future plans, and how much do we fast forward and say, okay, this is now what's going to happen, and the Samach is significant. So it's actually quite a lot of synergy, triple synergy, Daf Yomi, Asar Bateves, and the sugya. So, or at least this line. We'll have to get into the parsha also, which we probably could, so stay tuned for that tomorrow. So what's the machlokas? But the Gemara explains, but just so we know how to read here, what is their machlokas about Rav Huna and Rav Nachman? And that's, yeah?
It's how much you owe. Like, if we're saying Magogel and Alapet HaKol, does that mean like HaKol as in
everything? Sure.
Or HaKol as in HaKol for what you utilize?
So that's the implication of their machlokas, for sure. But what it's almost, you're not going to like this, it's almost a machlokas and metzias, the Gemara tells us. Not exactly metzias, but close enough to it. But it's okay, because this is the way the Gemara is presenting it. So what's really driving their argument here?
What part of the wall are they talking about?
Well, but that's also gets to the details. We're saying what's driving their debate is almost a metzias point, that essentially what the Gemara goes on to explain is that it's really just about how much do they read into what's happening. That, okay, so here the individual, Shimon, has built something which doesn't necessarily cover the whole territory, so should we still hold him responsible for the whole territory? So we have these two opinions. What we see from the next line in the Gemara is that it really just goes down to what do we think we can read into what he's done so far? Because maybe he'll stop. Like, maybe Nebuchadnezzar could have stopped, and maybe there wouldn't have been any Chorban. Right? So, maybe he doesn't intend to go any further. So that's why the Gemara has the next line, which goes into details of what's happening. So, Moder of Huna Bekarne Belufta. Right? So what does that mean when it says Moder of Huna Bekarne Belufta? Yeah?
That there are certain types of building situations, like what Rashi describes, where you're clearly not going to expand on what you're doing. I guess this example is like the edges and the crowns of the walls. Like adding that, you're not going to use anything else. Like,
right. So that type of construction does not indicate that he's going to go any further. So, and indicates he's not going to go further. So since we see that's modifying Rav Huna, so this is a big insight into what Rav Huna says. Right, so Amar Rav Huna originally, Samach L'Pamlos, V'Lpalga Samach L'Kula, because we're assuming, okay, we can read from here that he's going to keep going. But Moder of Huna, the kind of lifta. But if it's a type of construction that doesn't seem to tell us that, so then, okay, I admit, then I'm probably not going to take my position. I'm only taking my position in a normal situation where it looks like you're going to go further. And then, Moder of Nachman, Vafrizo v'kapta d'kshuri. Right, so then what does that tell us about Rav Nachman's opinion? Right, so what's the significance of the Friza Kavta Dikshuri? What are we talking about there? We're talking about a more significant kind of beam. Right, a Friza is like a core foundational kind of beam. So if he's establishing areas for beams that he's going to put further. So, to that, Moder of Nachman. So that's this next line, just like with Rav Huna, this next line is explaining Rav Nachman. That Rav Nachman's opinion was, no, we only go with what we already have so far. So Lamai de Samach Samach, we only have for where his smichas was to that. But if he's clearly showing that he plans on going further, because he's putting down these strong beams, or he's putting down a setting in order to put further beams on, okay, then I'll agree. So essentially, this next line in the Gemara, the modas, are a pretty clear statement of what each position was originally. That Rav Huna was saying that we can read from here that he's going to keep going, and therefore let's charge him for everything. But if the type of construction contradicts that, then I won't say it. And Rav Nachman was saying, no, we can only do what we have so far because we don't know what's going to happen. But I'll also admit that if he does construction that shows more vision for the future, then I'll see that differently.
Can they agree on what the probability is, but they just say that halacha is different based on probability?
Like they could.
Not likely, even though he's probably going to do it, it's not likely enough to make it done.
So you're bringing up an interesting point, and it's true that even within this, we can go further in trying to analyze their machlokas about where we're finding an obligation. So you're right that there's still more to ask. So given that this supplements the position, each position now is clearer with the modes, but still there's room to, okay, so maybe they both say that there's a 50-50 chance, but Rav Nachman says you can only deal with what you have in front of you, and therefore that's all there's going to be as a obligation. And Rav Huna is going to say that, no, we can use this likelihood as a basis to go forward, but if he contradicts it with contraindicating kinds of construction, sounds like that should be some kind of a title of something, then that will take things in a different direction. So that's where our Gemara is coming from, right? We're trying to figure out two questions. Right, and just also, it's important to keep focus on this, right? And I'm sorry that I like rhapsodizing about Masechtas in the middle of Shira, but it's just, I guess the truth is every year I find the Masechta has these beautiful, special qualities. But you see what's going on here, how everything is within itself and then coming back again. So this whole conversation is important because of, we noted when we started with the Mishnah, that the Mishnah has two levels of dinim in it. All right, so what are the two levels of dinim? Just to recap, what are the two sets of issues that the Mishnah is teaching interwoven with each other? Anyone want to help me out here? Yeah?
Chazakas in walls, and if you owe for walls.
Yeah, so let's see the first, let's switch the order, just because it's a little easier to relate
so
to.
So if you owe for walls and chazakas?
Yeah, that basically first, what is the responsibility of Shimon towards Reuven? Right, to what extent does Shimon have to participate in the costs? That's half of the dinim in the Mishnah. But interwoven with that is a whole other sugya of when can we assume that Shimon has or hasn't paid? And as we saw from Rashi on those dinim, that how much is clear and inarguable is a very significant point. Because when the obligation is clear and established, so then it becomes more likely that Shimon would pay up front. And B, that Reuven would not go forward without being sure that Shimon was paying. But when it's murkier, and when there is some unclear element, so then, it's less likely that Shimon would pay earlier, and that has all of the domino effects, that the chazaka goes against him, and that would also impact the kind of decisions that Reuven may or may not make. So it's important to recall that you come into this sugya with all of that foundation, that all of that is on our minds as we come to read these Gemaras. So the question between Rav Nachman and Rav Huna becomes very significant because, so yes, maybe they'll agree that there's essentially the same probability of one thing happening or the other, but how much can you work with that existing probability? In order for the dinim of the Mishnah to work, we have to consider what is Shimon's liability, and what is the clarity of Shimon's liability? because the clarity affects things also. The clarity affects the chazaka, and the chazaka affects the decisions that are made afterwards, and it affects what Reuven does. So everything is interconnected here. So all of that goes to the question of what are we able to figure out about what's happening. So this machlokus between Rav Nachman and Rav Huna, it's really pretty significant as far as understanding what the dual structure of the Mishnah is about. So then the Gemara continues. Amar Rav Huna, Bei Kavi lo havichazaka. Right. So let's say if somebody puts in these casings for beams. We're talking here about Reuven doing that. Well, or let's say Shimon put it this. So we see the word Rashi, right? Shimon shebiya kosel hacholek v'chatzel ma'il medal ramas v'asabah chalonos l'tzad Reuven. L'hanachas roshi kriso. Here he's switching who Reuven and Shimon are here, and this makes it a little more confusing. I gave a drasha on Shabbos and to give a hypothetical. So I was talking about the parsha and had to give a hypothetical. So I mentioned that, let's say, you have Mortimer and Stanley. So people are asking me afterwards, who's Mortimer, who's Stanley? I must be thinking about somebody specifically. Why would I use those names? So I said, in these parshas, if I talk about Reuven and Shimon, it's going to make everything very confusing. So Reuven is such a Shimon, but not that Reuven and not that Shimon. It doesn't, so our standard Reuven and Shimon can really get lost. So here he's kind of switching who it is. So here, so he makes these chalonos letzai Reuven hanachas rashi karus k'moshe pirashi lo avi chazaka lagabe Reuven. So this does not create a chazaka on Reuven's side. Lomar anisi aticha lahagbiu shulule shasiatcha lahayisa osali hanachas roshi hakaros, that this should establish that I must have helped you, because if I wasn't helping you, why would you make this container for what I want to build? Why would you make this casing for what I want to build? So that's not so effective. Shim avo lismoch lo kosol achar liachar zman sheatena leatikra. That you must be doing it for my purposes. Unless they maybe even put himluti on there. What are himluti? So Rashi explains. So you really put already beams there. Now these thick beams for protection. So all of that should show that we must have had an arrangement here. I must have paid my part, because you are all preparing for what I'm going to do later. We must have worked this out. So you could have thought that if what the other neighbor is doing is clearly there to help support what Shimon, where, again, trying to stay away from Shimon because he's switching back and forth, but what the second constructor might do, so you might think that that should support his claim that he already had paid into this project. So no, why? He said, "No, you haven't paid me yet, and I'm planning on later getting you involved in the project. But right now, you haven't made any commitments. But when the time comes, I want my walls to be prepared to hold this, and it's going to be harder if we're going to have to chip into them later. It's going to weaken the walls. So therefore, I made the wall conducive to your construction, not because you agreed on the construction, but because this is just in my interest to do so. But you, there's no evidence that you have cooperated with. Okay, so far so good. So coming from that, then the Gemara gets into how the chazakas are established. Rav Nachman, achzik lehurdi leachzik lekshuri, lekshuri achzik lekshuri achzik lehurdi. That if you were established a chazaka for thicker beams or for thinner beams, whether they work for vice versa, they work for each other. Rav Yosef Amar Achzik Lehurdi Achzik Lekshuri. Ikedi Amar Rav Nachman Achzik Lehurdi Achzik Lekshuri. Lekshuri Achzik, they should work either way. And Amar Rav Nachman Achzik Lenatvi Achzik Leshavchi. So let's say somebody has a chazaka that he lets his neighbor have water drip into his property. So let's say it's soft drips. So does that also mean this chazaka works for harder drips? So achzik v'shivchi, achzik l'natvi, if Yosef Amar filo, achzik l'shafchi, achzik l'natvi, you can have Rav Nachman, achzik l'shafchi, achzik l'natvi, natvi, achzik l'shafchi, aval etzrifa dorbani, lo. Let's say if you have very thin slats, so you have a lot of water coming down because there's very little space in between them. So Rav Yosef Amar filo, etzrifa dorbani, aval Rav Yosef uvda b'tarf dorbani. Okay, so the Gemara is going to go on here and continue to talk about these principles of chazaka, where one neighbor is essentially using really his property in a way that requires him to benefit, to make use from his neighbor's property. And there is some negative impact, such that the neighbor perhaps would have basis to object. And yet, there is the possibility of a chazaka. And if there is the possibility, here we'll go back to Reuven and Shimon, for Reuven to establish that I've been able to put boards against your house, or I've been able to leak water onto your property, allow water to leak onto your property, and that will create a chazaka. And our Gemara wants to know, okay, so if a little bit, does that also work for a lot? Do we start measuring things down to very specific degrees, or do we say only this much and not that much? And if you get a chance to see the other Gemaras, so this is a concept that's going to come up a few times later in the future Prakim. It comes up on Daf Chav Gimel in the context of Harchakas Nezikin. So hopefully if you get a chance to see that, get a chance to see it tomorrow a little bit. And it comes up also in Cheskes Abatim, in the context of some Gemaras that we've seen a little bit about. So, for example, these big issues of windows that we've talked about a few times, and where the existence of a window establishes that the Baal HaWindow, Bill Gates, should be allowed to continue to have his window in that sense. And how do we establish chazakas in that context? So what we're seeing here is chazakas invoked in a couple of different contexts, right? And that's not even to list all the kinds of chazakas that exist, even the ones that exist in Bava Basra, even the ones that exist in the first three prakim. So let's try to enumerate how many possible chazakas we have talked about in the past few minutes, the past few months. So what possible chazakas do we have? We have, yeah, Zach?
Yes, from the Gemara on Bavam and Aleph and the beginning of Bavam and Bet that we looked at.
Mm-hmm.
So we have chazaka that I paid or I didn't pay.
Okay.
We have chazaka that...
Which, by the way, is on the surface a completely different usage of the word chazaka, yet might be highly relevant, yeah?
Chazaka if I'm allowed to use one sort of material / technology, am I allowed to use a different type?
Okay.
Then on the top of Amidvet...
You say technology, it's interesting.
That's how I understood the whole question with the water flowing down.
Okay, but that may confuse us a little bit, because I was joking when I said Bill Gates and Windows a minute ago, but you're bringing in all kinds of intellectual property issues by talking about technology. So let's keep that off the table for a second. I'll take Bill Gates off the table at the same time. But chazaka of materials.
Materials.
I mean, materials that have different kind of impacts.
Then there's also chazaka of if I put something up and I built something, if you didn't say anything after a certain amount of days, that it becomes permanent sort of chazaka.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of chazaka is that? What area is that chazaka impacting? Or is that every sentence? You ever just use that wall? So the chazaka, the universe doesn't care. Yeah.
Doesn't that fall under pay or didn't pay? Like by or like allowed or not allowed? Meaning?
Not sure.
I thought it was a riot.
Or chazaka that you're able to go to court and make me take it down.
Well, but it's also just involving a different area, right? It's the question which we discussed a few months ago. Several weeks ago, right? The question of to what extent there is or isn't chazaka in has Zikriya. Mm-hmm. Right, so the Gemara's talk about windows are bringing up that issue. So let's enumerate like this. All right, so what we have just in the past few minutes, first just from this Gemara, and all the questions of related issues here, we see Chezkas Tashmishin, which is what Ardaf is talking about. And to what extent can I use, and we don't really mean use somebody's property, like can I use your laptop and you let me take your laptop? It's not that kind of active usage. But it's more usage in the sense that my involvement in my own property ends up impacting your property. So I'm using your property in that sense. Like I'm using your property to allow my water to fall onto, or to allow my beams to rest against, things like that. It's a more subtle kind of usage. But Chezkas Tashmishin is the apparent topic of our sugya. Then we also mentioned Chazaka in Harchakas Nezikin, which has to do with the expectations mostly dealt with in the second parak, that neighbors will take care to not use their property in a way that has negative impact on others. And yet, because that's a balancing of rights, so it becomes important what is consensus between them. And Chazaka comes to define that. And then, in the third parak, is the issue of Chazaka in Hezek Ria, which we may recall that when we talked about Chotzer in the first Mishnah, we saw the Rush and a few other Rishonim, that there was a major machlokas to what extent there is Chazaka in Hezek Ria. Right? Remember that Rush in the very first Mishnah? But there, it was a little bit more complex, if we need more complexity here, that there is talking about the basic obligation of a wall between two neighbors in a Chotzer, where there is that core Hezek Ria obligation. And there, the Rush suggesting that the facts and the elements don't allow for Chazaka. But it could be that when we're removed from that a little bit, in different situations that also involve Hezek Ria, and on Monday we talked about the fact that Hezek Ria probably includes at least two different kinds of privacy issues. So it could be that there are different applications as far as Chazaka is concerned. And that even if, in the context of the first Mishnah, the wall between two chatzeros, so there maybe there's no chazaka, but when the facts are more conducive, that there could be chazakas for Hezekria, and that's also a potential discussion here. So we have this concept of chazaka, of use of one's house, really with maybe three separate, they're all related, but maybe three separate kinds of applications. Here, just the basic use, which involves some kind of involvement of your property. That's what's on Ardaf. That which possibly impacts you more negatively, which is closely related, but more the topic of the second parak. And that which involves impositions on your privacy, which comes up in the third parak. So three slightly nuanced applications of a pretty similar idea. Basically, we'll call all of those different applications of Chezkas Tashmishin. Now, there are other chazakas that also appear in this Masechta, which may or may not be related. So, I said to Zach before that he brought up another kind of chazaka, which he's correct to bring it up, but it actually is a completely different application, completely different usage of the word. So, we've been talking this past few minutes about chazaka and property, meaning that you have certain rights. In this context, it means you have certain rights. But before this, immediately before this, we're talking about a whole different usage of the word chazaka. I remember looking once, I think in the Encyclopedia Talmudis, it was a long time ago, that on the listing of chazaka, in Ches, now they're way past Ches, but Ches has been around for a while, it's like a chazaka in Encyclopedia Talmudis, I think it starts off saying there are 15 different kinds of chazaka. So here, this is a completely different usage of the word, but the whole sugya right before this about a chazaka in adam perei tov zmano, that a person is not going to pay before he's due, and that that impacts how our Mishnah plays out. So that's a chazaka, meaning it's a premise, or it's a postulate, that you can say that this is how people behave. Maybe it's a form of aruba delesa kaman, or maybe it's a type of rove that is not statistically identifiable, but reflects just a premise of human behavior. So that was seemingly a whole different usage of the word that was relevant not very long ago. Yeah.
Does that also fall under, so then is cheskas shalonatan / cheskas shenatan fall under that poria b'tochas mano?
It does. That's why the Gemara is bringing it up. Right, that the Gemara there introduced Perea Tos Mano in this Mishnah because of that issue. Right? He wants to know that when two people are fighting over a debt, and we don't know, they're basically a factual dispute, did you pay or did you not pay? So we have to look to the Chazakas to see what facts are more likely or reliable. So, yeah, the Gemara was paralleling the issue of somebody claiming he paid before his debt was due to the issue in the Mishnah of a neighbor claiming I paid for my part in the wall, and that's why the Gemara has to struggle with, well, when does it become due? Is it due earlier? Is it due at every stage? Is it clear that he's going to be obligated? Is there a difference between somebody who borrowed money and somebody in this somewhat more murky situation where there may or may not be a debt? Yeah.
So then, is that separate then from what Rav Nachman and Rav Huna are talking about, which seems to be a discussion about Bei Kaveh? It seems to be more a question of once you're doing something, I can factually assume that you have paid already or not.
So is what different from what?
Is that different than Porea Batoch's Mano? That seems to be a different chazaka. As in, at that point, I can say the fact that you, again, Rapuna disagrees, but you could theoretically say, I see that you're doing X and Y and Z construction, so that is makes it clear to me that somebody has paid already.
Well, I think the Rav Huna line, you know, as we noted at the outset, that flows more naturally from the Perea Tos Mano thing. That it's all about, that whole sugya is about what premises should we work off, given what we have in front of us, and given what we know about human behavior. So two people are fighting over monetary debt, and if we know nothing, we just know Reuven is saying Shimon owes him money, and that's all we know, we don't know anything else. So then we have another kind of chazaka in play, that is a chezkas mamon, right? That the person is literally holding on. It's also a translation of the word chazaka. The person is literally holding on to the money. And like we discussed then, possession, 9/10 of the law, both it's a secular expression, but it conveys a lot of the attitude of the halacha as well, that there is a lot of significance to someone being in physical possession of something. So therefore, the benefit, the doubt usually goes to the mochzak, usually goes to the person who has the money in his pocket. But as we noted, that there's different ways to understand why that is. Why is it that we give the edge to the person who is the defendant, essentially, the person who is holding on to the money? And the burden of proof is on the plaintiff. So there are different ways to understand that have different implications. A part of it is just that it's a big step to take somebody out of their chazaka, and you need a lot of legal foundation to do so. So we just don't do that unless we are really confident. Or maybe it's also because the assumption is the chazaka has some correlation to the truth, which brings up another chazaka. Chazakam shemashi taches yado shaladam harehu shalom. Right, so if Reuven and Shimon are fighting over a sweater, Shimon is wearing a sweater, and Reuven says it's mine, so if we don't have any other proof, we let Shimon keep it because hamotzi mechaver lo haraya. But why is that? Is that because just to take the sweater away from Shimon is a more aggressive legal move, and we don't do that without proof? Or is it either or also, maybe it's just a parallel, that the fact that Shimon is wearing the sweater makes it much more likely that Shimon is right. Now, it's not 100%. Shimon could have stolen the sweater or borrowed it and refused to give it back. So it's certainly not 100%. It's just that statistically, it's more likely that the person who's in possession is the actual owner. So it supports his factual argument. And therefore, sometimes we find the halacha distinguishing between when those kind of situations and situations where the facts are not so tied into the chazaka. So, for example, something that people tend to lend out, or animals that move. Now, if you have an animal that you know moves from one, moves on his own, and he ends up in somebody else's backyard, it doesn't necessarily say so much about the ownership of that backyard and the animal. So sometimes it's just, it's a big burden to overcome to take away from the muhzak, and sometimes because the muhzak itself is a statement, is itself not proof, but it's evidence of something, that there is a stronger premise here. So that's what the Gemara was dealing with immediately off of the Mishnah, that how do we take the fact sets here and use that plug that into the formula in the computer and say who's more believable. So that's all one kind of chazaka. And Rav Nachman and Rav Huna, I don't know how much weight to put on the two dots, but the fact that the printer put the two dots here, so maybe we should have put the two dots after Rav Nachman and Rav Huna. Right, so that seems to be very much flowing from the issue we're talking about till now. And then all of a sudden, the subject changes to Chezkas Teshmishim. Yeah, Shmuel?
Just on the two-dot thing. The two dots are like their new thing? Like
yeah, you know, it's a printer thing.
Okay.
But, you know, it's hard to know. Sometimes it has, sometimes it fits more, sometimes it fits better. You know, it's a little bit like the chapter division in Chumash, which was, that's done by the non-Jews. We don't know how much it reflects somebody's understanding of what makes sense, but it's not necessarily so absolute. And there's also periods in the Rambam. Right, so it's hard to know how much weight to put on them. But so here also, so maybe I would have thought that let the two dots go after Kaptan Shure, after Rav Nachman's clarification. So the Gemara starts this new sugya about Chazaka. I'm sorry, after Lusra Ishtai, as you say. So this whole sugya about Achzik Luhurdi, Achzik Lukshure. This whole sugya about Chesed Teshmishin. So is that a tangent? Or is that stream of consciousness? It's interesting that this whole other kind of chazaka comes up here. Right? This is maybe a second parak sugya. Yeah?
Is there a possibility that the two chazakas are related?
There's a big possibility. And in fact, it's important to note here, this is what I'm leading up to, that the view of Rabbeinu Tam is that this is actually not what it looks like. Right? That that's what I said in the first sentence, ostensibly, that this discussion in the Gemara about Chezkas Teshmishin, maybe it's not here to teach us about Chezkas Teshmishin. So a number of the Rishonim quote Rabbeinu Tam, hopefully you'll see it tomorrow, that this is here to just continue the discussion of the Gemara. And that the Gemara is trying to establish what kinds of behaviors are expected between neighbors and what's significant and what's not significant. And what type of allowances one neighbor will extend to the other and what's normal and what isn't normal. So according to Rabbeinu Tam, that's what this Gemara is doing here. It's just trying to continue this discussion that we had just said immediately before this, that if Reuven built a wall, so then we need to figure out to what extent Shimon is expected to benefit from it and therefore expected to participate. And we look a little bit to Shimon's behavior for clues. And maybe we look a little bit to Reuven's behavior too. So if Reuven built it in such a way that specifically looking to accommodate what Shimon is going to do in the future. So does that show us that he has worked it out with Shimon? Shimon has paid in, and Reuven wouldn't have done these extra things were it not for the fact that Shimon had indicated a desire to participate? Or then the Gemara says, no, it's not so slam dunk, because it could be that Reuven just did this as part of his anticipation that there'll be future participation. And he plans on trying to win him over. But because that might happen, it's worth it for Reuven to build it in. Because, you know, you get building the wiring in the house for future technology that you may not have yet, because it's going to be so expensive or so negatively impactful on the house if you have to tear things later in order to put it in. So Reuven wants to be prepared for that, so he doesn't want to have to do this later. But maybe Shimon had no involvement. Maybe Shimon did not agree to any of this, but just Reuven is still hoping that the time will come 5-6 years from now when Shimon decides he wants to build, and I want my walls to stay strong, so I'm preparing for that now. So then we continue, okay, well, what are the rules of one neighbor allowing another neighbor to use? And where can you intuit, where can you infer that if Shimon is using Reuven's property, that means that there is something unusual here, or is that essentially what they can be expected to allow each other? So that's how Reuven Tam understands that essentially this is just a direct continuation of this discussion. And indeed, the issue otherwise is really a second parak issue. It's really a question of how these two neighbors relate to each other. Now, what you'll see when you'll see more of the sources tomorrow, and what we'll fill in probably next week, is that there are a number of major questions. I'll just try to mention this quickly. A number of major questions that the Rishonim are going to debate here. Because there's yet another chazaka that we haven't mentioned yet. That's also a major Bava Basra topic. So much so that it is part of the name of one of the upcoming prakim. Cheskes Habatim. Right? So the third parak is called Cheskes Habatim. And that deals with a very well-known chazaka. The Cheskes Gimel Shanim, which is also often misunderstood. We spoke about it a little bit a few months ago, because there is also a parallel concept in secular law which works differently, so it's easy to confuse the two. Concept of adverse possession or squatter's rights, which you can Google.
And here there is cheskas shoshim yom in cheskas.
So this part we need to figure out. So in the context of cheskas habatim, so there is a notion that if Reuven is living in what used to be Shimon's house, is living there for 3 years, so then that gives him a chazaka. So what does that mean, gives him a chazaka? So here's where it's easy for the details to get lost, right? It sounds, because chazaka is also, like you said, so many different usages of the same word, chazaka is also listed as one of the three primary ways that one acquires property, through chazaka. So one might think that chezkes gimel shanim means that if I, the phrase squatter's rights implies, that if I hang out, if I hide out in somebody else's house and I manage to survive 3 years there, that itself is an acquisition. So that's not really accurate as far as the sugya is concerned. That in our context, what Cheskes Habatim means is that the acquisition happened a different way. I purchased this house. However, at some later date, there is a challenge. The original owner, who is known as the original owner, therefore has what's called the Cheskas Marakama. He has the presumption of being the original owner, which has its own set of supports for his position. So we call him Murray in our hypotheticals, the Marakama. So Murray comes and says, what are you doing? You're living in my house. And Zeke, our name for the machzik. So Zeke says, no, I bought it from you. Don't you remember? I bought it from you a year ago. So Murray says, nothing doing. I never sold you my house. I went away for a vacation and you snuck in and you're claiming to have lived there. So Zeke says, I bought it from you. So Mari says, if you bought it, you would have a deed. You would have a shtar. So what's with that? So Zeke tries to wish upon a shtar, and you can't find it. So then, how do we adjudicate that? So if Zeke has succeeded in living there for 3 years, so then that supports his claim. His claim that I bought the house and that's how I managed to live here for 3 years without anyone complaining. So that becomes a support for his claim. And then if Mari says, well, where's the shtar? So Zeke is able to be the victor in these shtar wars because he says, it's been 3 years. You can't expect me to hold on to a shtar for 3 years. It went supernova. And I don't have it anymore. So a person is not expected to hold on to a shtar for 3 years. That's considered now the idea that if somebody says, I lost the shtar, so if he says that a month after he bought the house, people say, come on, you put all this money in a house and you went through the closing and everything like that, and you're not even protecting the shtar, that doesn't make sense. If Murray is claiming it's still his house, we're going to believe him. But if it's been 3 years, so then when you say that you don't have the shtar, so then that's credible because people can't hold on to a shtar for that long. And it's not a claim against you that you don't have the shtar. It supports your claim that you were able to survive there 3 years without anyone saying anything. It's pretty unlikely if it wasn't actually your house. So all of those together, they support the fact set of Zeke, and Zeke is able to prevail here. So what's crucial, what's often left out of what people perceive about Chezkas Gimel Shanim, is it's called the Chazaka Shiyeshi Martina, right? That it's not the Chazaka that does all the work. It's a Chazaka that supports a claim. So the Chazaka is not Zeke's reason for saying he should be able to live in this house. The reason he says he should be able to live in this house is because he purchased the house. Why do we believe him that he purchased the house when he's still on a shtar search? Because he has the chazaka.
Star Trek.
Right, Star Trek would probably be better. Okay, so, if he gets thrown out, that's called a Star Trek. Or a Starless.
Well, and if his son comes back, it's Star Trek The Next Generation.
Beautiful. Beautiful. So, in any event, so this idea, basically, the crucial point is it's a chazaka sheyeshi motaina. Right? It's not the chazaka that does it. It is the taina that does it, and the chazaka is what supports the taina. So what you'll see when you see Rishonim who talk about this Gemara is that there are a lot of open questions, and look for these issues when you look at the sources. So this Chezkas Tashmishin, some questions off the bat is it immediate or does it require time? Right? Because the Chezkas Gimel Shanim is not immediate. That requires time. And a probably related topic, and you'll be able to figure out why they're related, is does it require a Chazaka Shiyeshi Motaina? Like Chezkas Abatim? Or is it different? So how is this related to Chezkas Abatim? That's going to be a major issue in the Rishonim. So in that context, you need time to pass and you need a taina. You need those two things. So just being there is not enough. You have to be there for a certain period of time, and you also have to have a more fundamental claim to the property that this is just proof of. This isn't what does it. So is that true here also? You need some period of time, and you need a taina. Do you need a taina? Or is our sugya saying that just existing with being able to do these things and the neighbor is not protesting, so that does it. You don't have to wait. And maybe you don't need a taina either. Maybe it's the reality of his mechila, of his not protesting, that creates the chazaka. So that would be a major distinction from Chezkas Abatim. So you'll see right away in the Rishonim that these are issues that they are talking about. And essentially, that's going to be the question. Is this a more localized, miniaturized form of Cheskes Abatim that is the topic of the third parak? Or is this a very different thing which does not have any of those requirements and is happening through a different process? So Bez Hashem, you'll see that from your Seder tomorrow, and we will explore as we go on, and we will daven mincha.